Coming up on Golf Today, it is a week of bubble boys and bubbles bursting at the PGA Tour regular season finale. But who has the game to break their bubble at the Wyndham Championship and find their way to the FedEx Cup playoffs? And from bubble breakers to drought breakers, we know winning a major is hard work. But we have found the player whose long-awaited major drought will come to an end on Sunday at the AIG Women's Open. And how cool to be joined by the defending champ, Anna Nordqvist, who has three majors on her resume. What will be her keys to adding major number four at historic Muirfield? Big questions to answer right here on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
And how are you? This is Golf Today on a Tuesday. Damon Ack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine. As Jim Morrison, The Doors, once sang, this is the end, my beautiful friend, the end of our elaborate plans, the end of everything that stands. My friend, we're near the end.
We are. It's the dog days of August here, but winter's starting to loom pretty quickly for a lot of players on either tour here. You know, if you're on the LPGA Tour and another last major of the season goes by and you haven't put your stamp on the year, you're going to be itching to get to the Chevron next year. And if you're on the PGA Tour, this is the last week to play your way into the playoffs. And in a lot of cases, give yourself some kind of status for next year. This is the last chance saloon, and there's a lot of people desperate to get served, Damon.
I love you said itchy. There's a lot of itchiness this time of year. Do you like this time of year?
Oh, yeah, and I really can't wait until this time next year when the fall series that will kind of be the preamble to the calendar year schedule in 2024, when people are playing for basically we have the equivalent of the Wyndham Championship for at least a half dozen times during that fall, as people are desperately playing for some kind of status for the next year.
Itchiness, desperate, look at you already in mid-show form on this Tuesday. Yes, we have reached the regular season finale on the PGA Tour. Some crucial, very crucial FedEx Cup points are up for grabs at the Wyndham Championship, the last chance for some players to even qualify for the playoffs. Others are just trying to better their chances to get to Eastlake in Atlanta. So let's take a look at the Comcast Business Tour Top 10. Now remember, after Sunday, the players who make it to the Top 10 will split a $20 million bonus pool. Mathematically, only two players in this week's field can play their way to the Top 10. That's Billy Horschel and Sung Jae-im. And you see Scottie Scheffler top of this list with a big smile on his face. The Masters champ has mathematically secured $5 million in bonuses this season. Scotty cannot be caught in the Comcast Business Tour Top 10, winning $4 million and an additional $1 million for winning the season-long Aon Risk Reward Challenge. Now, both awards will officially be awarded after the conclusion of the Wyndham Championship. Scotty also, by the way, made more than $13 million in official PGA Tour prize money. So meanwhile, on the list, there will be more pressure on the players on the FedEx Cup playoffs and eligibility points list. Bubble, you see Ricky Fowler, 123 on the right side of the bubble for now. Masters champion Danny Willett on the wrong side of that bubble.
Well, the bubble watch at the Wyndham Championship, Damon, always brings some good drama, even if it sends some players racing for a bottle of Mylanta. You remember last year? Chesson Hadley entered the week outside the top 125. But in the final round at Sedgefield, he walked onto the 16th tee, pulled off a miracle, made his first hole-in-one on the PGA Tour.
What it's all about, Eamon, performing under pressure, livelihoods at stake.
You need a little bit of luck. Not sure what's better, the shot or the celebration, which Chesson later dubbed the flying baby giraffe. But nevertheless, that ace led him to a tie for 15th finish, and that gave him the last and final spot, the 125th spot in the FedEx Cup playoffs. So let's take your pick time, Damon. There's a lot of interesting names that are right on that bubble and a lot of interesting names that are right on the wrong side of that bubble. Who do you see as the most likely to play their way into the playoffs?
Zach Johnson's on the wrong side of that bubble, currently 142nd on the list. But he has done this before. You go back to 2020, he was 129th on the list, shot 61-65 at the Wyndham, finished tied for seventh, got well inside that 125 bubble. I think he'll do it again. Had three rounds in the 60s at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. I think he has pride. He's not just the Ryder Cup captain. He's a two-time major champ who has been in this position before, Eamon. I like Zach Johnson this week to make something special happen probably needs to finish deep into the top 10 to make it happen and get into the playoffs.
And it's shocking to see him in that position, given that this is a guy whose entire career has been a model of consistency.
Yes.
But he hasn't had a single top 10 finish in 22 starts.
He's got a lot on his mind. You know, he's worried about
the young players. He's got a lot of distractions. At least he hasn't been fired as Ryder Cup captain, so he doesn't have that much on his mind.
Yeah, he's a prideful player. I think he's going to find a way to get it done. How about for you? Who's your pick to play his way into the playoffs?
I'm looking at the guy who's number 130 on that list right now, Cameron Champ. And, you know, it hasn't been a good season for Cameron Champ. Even if you look at his last seven starts, he's actually, at least he's now trending in the right direction. He missed five straight cuts, but he's made two top 20 finishes since. It was that tie 16 at the 3am. He also finished a tie 20th last week at the Rocket Mortgage Classic as well. So he's definitely showing form in the right direction, but it's been a pretty lousy season. You know, he's not even in the top 150 in things like strokes gained approach, strokes gained around the green, strokes gained putting. There's a lot that's going wrong in Cameron Champ's game right now, but he's another guy who's done this before as well. Last year, he won the 3M, and with only a couple of weeks left in the season, and went from 140th on the FedEx Cup standings to 49th. And, you know, he's never missed the playoffs in what is still a relatively young career. So I'm kind of optimistic that maybe he'll find something coming off those two consecutive top 20 finishes to make a little run.
He's one of those players, I think, that given some good health and a long stretch of health, he's a player who has dealt with some back injuries in his young career, that I'm kind of waiting to see if he's going to have that kind of lasting fifth gear. But it seems like sometimes for him it's one step forward, one step back, two steps forward, two steps back, in large part because of the putter or because of injury.
It's certainly not because of the driver, which is still an awesome sight to behold if you're standing behind him on a driving range on tour. And he's still top 10 on tour and strokes gained off the tee. So that's not and never has been a problem for Cameron Champ. But he seems to exist in this kind of feast or famine world out there, where he's, you know, a couple of times he's won early in the season and then just disappeared for months on end, and then has finally rediscovered himself as well. But, you know, he's also a guy who's got a lot of other interests, and some people might call them distractions. I wouldn't. But he's, over the last couple of years, emerged as one of the more significant social justice voices on the PGA Tour as well. So his impact isn't necessarily just limited to whatever his FedEx Cup standings are, but his game right now has got to be considered pretty far short of where Cameron Champ thinks that he ought to be.
Did start his own foundation and has the Mac Champ Invitational, named after his late grandfather, who was a big inspiration to Cameron. How about these players like a Ricky Fowler? You talk about players who are not accustomed to being in this position on the bubble trying to chase it. He's at 123. He has talked about, you know, not wanting to take the bad days and the bad weeks of work home with him. How about Ricky Fowler perhaps making a move on this final week of the regular season?
It's hard not to take the bad weeks home with you when there are fewer good weeks than you're accustomed to, if you're Ricky Fowler. And I actually thought this season was going to be different for Ricky. John Tillery changes were going to kick in. He finished third. He had a great battle with Rory McIlroy at the CJ Cup out in Vegas last October. And here we are now, so many months later, and Ricky still hasn't actually made any real progress. The results just simply aren't there at all. The confidence isn't there at all for Ricky Fowler. He's no longer eligible for most of the major championships. And that's got to be a pretty humbling experience for a guy who was being... He was the triumph of marketing, in a way, that he was going to be the needle mover, but Ricky Fowler backed it up with the results. And he never quite got enough credit for that. But he won the Players' Championship. He's won a handful of other tour events. He won the Scottish Open on the European Tour as well. The guy has proven himself as a winner on tour, but the swing changes that he sought to make since leaving Butch Harmon just have not kicked in. And it doesn't take very long out here before you start to feel like yesterday's man, even if you are still relatively young in your career.
He's also pointed to the putter. And I tell you, at Sedgefield, those greens are the quickest, purest, and some of the best on the PGA Tour. Maybe he can find some heat with that putter. But that's been also a problem spot, surprisingly, considering he was one of the best putters, and for a time, the best putter on the PGA Tour.
And that's a problem if you're what was your Excalibur suddenly becomes your kryptonite.
Yeah.
Because the putter can only cover for so many missteps on the way to the green. And right now, Ricky is just making too many missteps on the way to the green, and puts too much pressure on the putter. The putter doesn't quite live up to the billing that it once had. And suddenly Ricky's ability to cover his mistakes just isn't what it once was.
Ricky looking for some heat this week in North Carolina. Now, one player looking to stay in position to play the FedEx Cup playoffs is Austin Smotherman, who enters this week at 125. Earlier today, Austin spoke with our Kira K. Dixon at Sedgefield Country Club.
All right, Austin, we are here at the Wyndham Championship, the last event of the regular season. Yep. You're on the cusp of making the playoffs. Just kind of describe what your emotions are coming into this week.
A whole lot of excitement. Have watched the Wyndham Championship a bunch on TV. Actually, I've never been to Sedgefield. So we're out here seeing it for the first time. I'm going to play 18 holes today. And yeah, I mean, just a lot of excitement. Staying in the house this week with my caddy and his brother. My wife's coming in. So yeah, it should be a good week.
What are your impressions of Sedgefield so far?
Awesome. I mean, best greens I've seen in a long time. Rough is up. I mean, it's great test.
Good.
Yeah.
We'll make for an exciting week.
Absolutely.
So speaking of an exciting week, you know, we mentioned that you're on that cusp. You're very familiar with this position. The last, like, 7 weeks
when
of the Corn Ferry.
When you guys wanted to chat, I mean, we knew exactly what it was about.
Well, we want to chat about lots of things, but the last 7 weeks of the Corn Ferry Tour season last season, you were kind of in a very similar position. What do you remember about what helped you seal the deal and push through that you're maybe going to try to draw on here?
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what I'm going to draw on, is those feelings of, you know, my goal isn't to just keep my card or just break the 25 spot or just break the 125 spot. It's to contend and play my best golf week in and week out, and that's kind of a byproduct of that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it starts today on a Tuesday, seeing the course, getting prepped, and then just resting. I know it's going to be a lot of mental energy expended and hot, kind of humid week. So it's those feelings of delivering, you know, last year on the Corn Ferry, draw on those and be ready for whatever happens this week.
When you did deliver on the Corn Ferry Tour, you make it to the PGA Tour. You play in your first event, the Fortinet, as a PGA Tour professional.
Yep.
I was there. And I remember you making the cut, and I want to show you something. So this is right after you make the cut and seeing your family.
Oh, that's cool.
That's you hugging your grandma.
Yeah, and sadly, she passed away a few weeks ago.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. But that's really special. I mean, I know she's watching, and yeah, it's incredible. But yeah, the family support, something else, you know, I'll draw on. I know family's watching. They're excited to come to the first playoff event next week. And yeah, I mean, just make it as far as we can. I know guys have been in that 100 to 125 spot and made it the Tour Championship. So that's our lofty goal. But I don't think it's far off. So that's what we're shooting for.
When you see that, and there's more videos I'll send you,
oh,
your whole family being so excited to take photos together. What do you remember about that week that has kind of fed you for this entire season?
Just to remember, I mean, this is my lifelong dream to play on the PGA Tour, and hitting that opening tee shot, making the cut in my opening event, and then to be at the culmination of the last regular season event in the position we are. I mean, it's obviously I'd like to be in a better spot, but I mean, what's wrong with a little extra excitement? Might be a little extra pressure, but you know, it's, we're professional golfers. That's, pressure is the name of the game, so.
All right, well, best of luck this week.
Thank
you. Have fun, and it'll be exciting to watch.
Absolutely. Go get some Wyndham reward points.
Special time for Austin. How about a shout-out to the Monday qualifiers? Monday Warriors come out to play. Blake McShay, UNC Wilmington, Mickey DeMorant from Merritt Island, Florida. You've got Yannick Paul, a couple top 20s on the PGA Tour this season. Richard Lamb, who once finished third at the 2017 Deer. Congrats on getting into the Wyndham this week. And still to come, we've seen some big-time players break some big-time major droughts this year. So who could be next this week? We'll debate with our good friend, Paige McKenzie.
The final major championship of 2022 is upon us as the world's best golfers take on Muirfield for the AIG Women's Open. The event became permanently affiliated with the LPGA Tour in 1994, and then in 2001 was elevated to major championship status. And groups don't come more compelling than the numbers 1, 2 and 3 in the world rankings. Jin-Young Ko, Nelly Korda and Minji Lee will all play together Thursday and Friday. A little earlier, we heard from some of the best players in the world.
Oh, I think just a lot of hard work has kind of come together. You know, we work so hard for, you know, our our goals and our dreams to come true. And I think for Cam, I think it's been a whole lot of hard work and a lot of hours into his skills and his games. So I think it's almost the same for everybody, and it's the same for me too.
Manjeet, what did you take out of last week, playing at Dundonald, that you feel can help you this week?
I think just getting into the rhythm of playing on links style courses. It wasn't quite that windy at Dundonald, so I'm not sure how windy it's going to be here, but I feel like Muirfield is maybe a little bit more traditional, like links golf. Like Dundonald felt like it had a lot more slopes here and there, so I think just a tiny bit different style of the actual design of the courses.
It's been great. Like I said, I've just only played 18 holes. The grounds are beautiful, really nice views of the water as well. Everyone's been really welcoming. The practice facility is amazing. I love that the ninth hole comes back to the golf the clubhouse. It's a beautiful golf club, beautiful golf course, and so far everyone's been really welcoming, and I think it's going to be a great test to see how the weather is going to be. But I saw that I think they've hosted 16 Open Championships, so it's going to be really special to finally host a women's too this week.
The sort of round you played yesterday, what do you feel the strength's going to be required this week to do well here?
Definitely, I think all of it. If you want to win a tournament in general, everything kind of has to come together. But the par threes are definitely tough. I think the greens are a bit more undulated for British-style golf courses that I've played. So if it gets really windy, the greens are going to be really tricky. The par threes are pretty long. There's definitely a lot of fall-offs in the front of the greens. So overall, I think the entire golf course, you have to strike it well. The fairways aren't really too wide either. Sometimes you just have to be aggressive and just to take the shot in the fescue to be closer to the green. I think the golf course is going to be a great test depending on the weather too.
First time you've been over here, Nelly, since you've had a tough year health-wise. Obviously all good now. Can you just talk us through how difficult that spell was for you?
Yeah, I'm all good now. Thankfully, I've taken the right steps, taken the time off. It was tough, obviously, as well, missing the first major of the year and first part of the season. But I'm thankful that I'm here. I can be playing golf, doing what I love, traveling the world. And, I just have to monitor it, obviously. If you go through something like that, you just have to be more aware of these situations, and I've learned more about myself, learned more about my body, and I'm grateful that I'm just out here playing.
I love it here at Muirfield. I think it's maybe my favorite links that I've ever played. It's definitely going to be a great test, very challenging, especially if it's as windy as it is right now. But I think, it's just a beautiful views walking around, and it's a beautiful golf course, so I'm really excited to tee it up on Thursday.
How important is winning the second major? The first one's always good, but some people get stuck on the first one. How important is getting that box ticked off?
Oh, yeah, it's super exciting. It did take 6 years, but it was definitely worth the wait. To win my first major championship, it really changed my life. Just the attention that I received from media and from fans, and everything. But then to get the second one, it kind of it's a box that you can check off, and it just kind of makes you feel a little bit more confident about where your game is, and that you can compete on the biggest stages.
Just heard from Brooke Henderson. She's one of two players this year to break an elongated major drought. We're talking thousands of days. Brooke Henderson won her second major 6 years after her first, while KPMG Women's PGA champ Injie Chun ended her major drought of 6 years as well, and a Nordqvist drought of 1,435 days. So, Eamon, who will end their major drought this week at Muirfield?
Well, two of the names we just saw there, Injie Chun and Brooke Henderson, had previously last won a major in 2016. My choice is someone who's also a 2016 major champion, but we haven't seen much of lately, which is Lydia Ko.
Mm.
And, Lydia's had, since that 2016 Chevron win, she's had five top three finishes in majors. So she has been close, five LPGA Tour wins during that time as well. But she also went through a three-year drought where she didn't win anything at all, and which seems so improbable given the clip that she was winning at earlier in her career. but she has won each of the last two seasons. She held a 54-hole lead last weekend at the Trust Scottish Open and just kind of hit neutral on Sunday and didn't get it done. But she has played well in the past at the Women's Open. She was tied third at Turnberry back in 2015. Historically, her results there are less impressive in that major than any of the other majors, but she does have a decent record of playing links golf, and I think she's in form. She's number four in the world. She's oddly out of that conversation because so much attention goes on Jin Young Ko, Nelly Korda and Minji Lee.
Yeah.
But she's right there behind them, and I think this is going to be the week she breaks that drought.
I happen to be in agreement with you. I think she's on the cusp. I didn't like how she putted on Sunday at the Trust Golf Women's Scottish Open, but this season she's third in putts per green on the LPGA Tour. She's second in putting average. She's fifth in scoring. She is right there. And you mentioned her major championship resume since that second major in 2016. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the top five. She has 10 top tens as well. It's been as if she's not been in the mix, not been competitive. But I just wonder, I mean, she reminds me in a lot of ways of Jordan Spieth. There was such magic early. And then you know how the sausage is made. You know, Lydia went one direction because Jordan Spieth has kind of kept his team, coach, caddy. Lydia went a different direction. New coaches, new caddy, new equipment.
The only thing she didn't change was her name.
Exactly, at this point anyway. But do you think this is not just going to be maybe a win this week, which we both think, but can she get back to where she was, where the game looked easy and magical, or does this game, with its, you know, vagaries, just not allow for that?
I don't know that I've ever seen anyone get back to being able to play with the magical freedom that comes with youthful
Tiger, maybe.
Phenoms. Tiger, in a way, kind of never really lost it. He never returned to the player that he was at his absolute peak because that was a standard that had been set that nobody had ever reached before. But you look at a Jordan Spieth and that kind of effervescence that he played golf with first few years of his career. Rory McIlroy, very much the same. But eventually, you start to take on a little bit of scar tissue and you start to hit potholes along the way and your confidence gets knocked and then you start to make changes and then you're looking at the guy standing next to you on the range and thinking, well, he's playing better than I am. What's he doing? Should I try that?
Yeah.
And it's very easy to start going down rabbit holes in this game at any level where you start to think that there's always something better ahead and it's very, very difficult to ever get back to playing with the kind of freedom that a lot of people can play with in the early days of their career when there seems to be so much less at stake. So it would be hard for Lydia Ko, I think, to get back to that kind of attitude and to scrape off that scar tissue.
Yeah.
It's possible I would expect her to start winning perhaps more frequently than she has over the last couple of years. It's a matter of how you process the scar tissue, and she seems to have done a remarkably strong job of that.
Yeah, in some ways, the iPad, I think, is the worst invention ever. Not just because my 11-year-olds like to play video games on it, but players have access to their swings, and to see Lydia Ko looking at her swing or a Jordan Spieth looking at his swing on the range, I just want to see them, and I think they're getting back to being more natural. I mean, Jordan Spieth is a fighter, and he's someone who finds a way to get the ball in the hole, no matter how it looks. I think Lydia Ko has a lot of natural ability, and even her new coach, Sean Foley, not new anymore, but of about a year now, has said, just be an athlete. Go back to being an athlete, a natural player. I think sometimes too much technology is a detriment to these players.
We heard Rory McIlroy say similar things as well over the course of the last year, of just simply trying to think in the way that he used to. Try to be free of swing thoughts and have a natural athleticism to how you do it. But that's a lot easier said than done. We even see now, as Jordan's trying to get back to that hugely exaggerated rehearsal before every swing. And he's very much conscious of it. He's slightly embarrassed by it. But he said on the show here that he wants to get away from that at some point. But right now, that's still a safety net that he needs.
And he is a winner on the PGA Tour this season. Let's continue this conversation, bring in our own Paige McKenzie. Paige, you just heard our agreement that Lydia Ko be the next player to end that major drought. Who's your pick?
My pick is Yeoju Kim. And we're talking about a player that has an even longer drought than the droughts that you've been talking about. She was the 2014 Evian champion, and she similarly had a precipitous fall off in her game after the 2014 season. She won six times on the KLPGA that year, was non-member of the LPGA Tour when she won at Evian, and after that you saw a slow decline. If you look at what happened or how it happened, it doesn't take long to figure out that it was just a ball striking issue. And what we've seen since then is a better and more impressive Yeoju Kim. So back in 2015, which was the first year she was a full-time member on the LPGA Tour, she won twice worldwide that year at 70% of her greens in regulation, 16 twice worldwide as well. And you can see this decline throughout the years. 2018, she fell to 67th in the world from a top 10 player in the world. And then over the last couple of years, we've seen a resurgence of Yeoju Kim. She won in 2021. She's won already this season. And you can see the best of her career in her ball striking this season at 73%. Now, when you take into account as well her most recent finishes, this should give you confidence that she will be the player to break through and break that drought. Because in her last three finishes, she finished a tied for fifth at KPMG, a major championship, a tied for third at Evian, another major championship, and a tied for third last week at the Scottish. She's trending very much in the right direction for a good possible breakthrough again at the AIG Women's Open.
Okay, I'm changing my vote.
Me too. She just convinced me. Yeah.
What are we doing up here?
On this one. Hey, there's so many players in good form entering the AIG. Who's your player to watch this week?
You know, I think for a lot of people following the LPGA Tour, it has to be Minji Lee. She is the best player in the world. She is not ranked number one in the world, but she is by far the best player. And when I went and broke down kind of what has been going on with the world ranking, Minji Lee, over the last season, just so far since January, she's had 273 world ranking points. Jin Young Ko, 154. That's a vast difference. If you break it down by event, you're looking at 21 to 14. So she has far and away been playing the best golf. And then when you take into account that she's had two wins and two runner-up finishes on the LPGA Tour, I think everybody is looking at Minji Lee as a potential this week. And I'm just anxious to see her back in play. It's fun to watch a player play well. And this has been a career year for Minji Lee. She's known for being a great ball striker, which is, I think, part of the reason that she's had success in major championships.
You mentioned Jin
Young. And when you take into account, didn't even want to forget the fact that when you look at her record at the British Open or at the Women's AIG Open, you're looking at a player that has played extremely well here. Going back 7 years, she's got a couple missed cuts, but outside of those two missed cuts, ninth place, 25th, and then her last 4 years, a 10th, 11th, a third, and a tie for fifth last year, she's played this event well. So you got to keep that in mind.
Yeah, I was going to say, very consistent. Maybe Jin Young Ko not so consistent in this event. How do you feel about her chances to find major number three?
Yeah, Jin Young Ko had a very interesting year. And you mentioned her record at this event, and she's only played it three times. But two of the three times, she's been in the top five. Going back to 2015, where Invy Park ended up winning that, and Jin Young Ko at the time was just known as the other Ko, because that was in the midst of Lydia Ko's dominance as well. Missed the cut in 2018, finished third in 2019, and we haven't seen her play this event the last 2 years in 2020 or 21. So I'm anxious to see how she's going to play at this event that she's played so well at, but more importantly, I'm anxious to see how she's going to play. It's just been a very off year, and I say that as she's still the number one ranked player in the world. But when you look at how it's happened, she had a couple good finishes early in the year. She did win her first start of the year, but she's lost 7 yards off of the tee, which I find to be quite curious. And for the player that has led and been an historic leader in greens and regulation, the best that the LPGA has seen since Annika, she's lost 4 or 5% going into the green, which I would probably attribute to the poor ball striking off of the tee. So it's a bit of a curiosity with Jin Young Ko and what's gone on this season, but we do know over the last couple of years that she has a late kick, you guys. She's never out of the race, and you never know when she's going to turn it on and kick into the finish line.
Well, Paige, we've spent a lot of time talking about the heavyweights. Who's your sleeper pick this week?
For me, it's Lizette Salas. It's really hard to ignore a player that would finish runner-up two of the last three playings of the AIG Women's Open. Remember in 2019, she had shot 7 under on that Sunday when Hinaka Shibuno was the Cinderella story to go on and take it. And then last year, she was one of a handful of players that finished runner-up to Anna Nordqvist. So a player that plays well in link style of golf, as well as somebody that recently broke her own drought of winlessness when she paired up with Jennifer Kupcho in the Dow Great Lakes Bay Invitational. And I'm curious to see how she's going to parlay that performance into her own individual performances. We unfortunately did not see her finish last week at the Scottish Open as she had to withdraw. So I'm curious to see if her injury or whatever seemed to be plaguing her, which she referenced in a social media post that perhaps it was a wrist injury that caused the withdrawal last week. Curious to see if she's going to be healthy and then if she can ride that momentum of the win. Yes, it was a partner event that she won, but nonetheless a W on the LPGA Tour and returning to an event that she has performed very well at.
Absolutely right. Six top tens in majors, three of them at the AIG Women's Open. Thank you very much, Paige. We will see you next hour. And folks, catch history in the making as the best golfers in the world take on Muirfield for the year's final major championship. First round coverage of the AIG Women's Open begins Thursday at 6 a.m. Eastern. A little coffee golf on USA Network. Golf Today, back after this. Golf Today on a Tuesday continues. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine. We're talking a little Muirfield this hour, AIG Women's Open. I've never played Muirfield. I stayed on property once, that gray walls, you know, nice digs if you can get it, and then looked longingly on the golf course. I think I was covering a Scottish Open at Gullen. What a beautiful piece of property. I mean, the old course gets all the love, but sneakily, you know, Muirfield, you know, is second to none by a lot of people's estimation.
Yeah, I mean, you will find a lot of people who will give the history vote to the old course in St. Andrews, although Muirfield certainly doesn't lack history of its own, but you will find a lot of people, perhaps more people, who would say Muirfield is the best golf course in Scotland, arguably the best golf course in the world. The course is unimpeachable. What has gotten Muirfield some attention that's less flattering over the years is the club itself. Right. It's, you know, there's a standing joke in the British Isles that Muirfield is the rudest golf club in the world. Now, that's a reputation that has since eased quite a bit over the years. And it had a lot of competition over the years from a lot of different clubs out there, but certainly in the last few years, Muirfield has kind of loosened its girdle a little bit to find us where we are this week with hosting the AIG Women's Open. And, you know, it's just going to be a wonderful showcase of what is, to a lot of people, simply the best links course that's out there.
You've played it shot for shot. Your thoughts on, does it, you know, earn that reputation?
You don't want to go shot for shot with me on any golf course, David.
But do you think that the folks, the insiders who maybe quietly whisper that Muirfield is the best in the Rota, do you agree?
I think it is.
Okay.
It's not necessarily my favorite in the sense that I still have that soft spot for the old course.
Yeah.
But Muirfield, it's really hard to beat. I mean, because it's concentric circles with each nine, you're constantly shifting direction. And it's always interesting to me when you look at open Rota courses, the character of the people who win there. And the character who win at Muirfield, they tend to be pretty stoic characters, or at least they're gritty.
Faldo.
You know, Faldo won twice there.
Jack.
Tom Watson won there. Jack won there. Lee Trevino won there. And the only kind of non-stoic, in a way, you could argue, is won there, certainly recently, it's Phil Mickelson back in 2013. And that was probably I would argue, the best major championship performance of Phil Mickelson's career, because it was the one major that he'd always been told he was unlikely to win, that he hit a ball that was too high.
Yeah, and he believed that for many years. I remember quietly, I believed that the Open at one point in his life was probably the fifth most important major for him to win, and I include the Players' Championship in that conversation. He was that much at cross purposes with Lynx Golf. Then he wins that Masters in 2004, has a great run at Troon in 04, and then I continued to kind of fall in love with Lynx Golf, and then famously in 2013 won back-to-back the Scottish and the Open.
And it makes you wonder what the dynamic would have changed in terms of his relationship with the US Open had that Open Championship victory come earlier, because, you know, that it was only a month after his sixth and last runner-up finish in the US Open that it suddenly became the only missing piece in the career Grand Slam puzzle for Phil, because it wasn't until July of 2013 that he won the Open Championship, and he's really never contested the US Open or contended in it in that decade since then. But it really is a golf course that brings out the best players. You don't get freakish winners at Muirfield at all.
It's probably why I'm picking Lydia Ko to get it done, because I think she's of that ilk, of the thinker, the stoic player who kind of has seen every situation in the game, has a genius to the way she goes about her business, especially on and around the green, short game, can get herself out of trouble, doesn't get in trouble very often. I think she has the game and the persona to go right along with the Sir Nick Faldos and the Jack Nicklauses of yesteryear.
Well, we're going to need to see a lot of stoicism this week as well. The PGA Tour is making its final stop of the regular season, far away from your field in Greensboro, North Carolina, for the Wyndham Championship. The race to the FedEx Cup playoffs will come to an end this week for many players in the field, while others will find themselves progressing to the first playoff event next week in Memphis. And here's a look at some of the notables in the field. Stuart Sink, Jason Day, we're seeing a handful of major championship winners in here. Adam Scott, Webb Simpson, who's always around the top of the leaderboard at the Wyndham Championship. And one of the names you see there, Tom Kim. Following the Open last month, Tom accepted special temporary membership onto the PGA Tour, meaning the 20-year-old needed to obtain a certain amount of FedEx Cup points to earn his 2022-2023 PGA Tour card.
Exactly what he did last Sunday, the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Tom Kim able to get it done and get that PGA Tour card. He joins us now. Tom, it's great to see you, first of all. You said on Sunday you were going to be very, very emotional. The celebration would be kind of heavy. What was your Sunday night like when you secured that card?
Yeah, it was not much sleep, just lying down, looking at the ceiling, just realizing, you know, what I've accomplished. And, yeah, it was surreal. You know, I still can't believe it. And, yeah, it was a special one.
Tom, your dad played the Buy.com Tour, as it was known back then, and then became a teaching professional. Has it always been a goal for you within your own family to make it to the PGA Tour?
100%. I mean, ever since I've played golf, the first time I think I grabbed the club, I always thought about playing on the PGA Tour. That was it. You know, it was nothing else. And it's been a lifelong dream. And, you know, it's all these years of just, you know, behind the scenes work and the sacrifices that my family made for us to be here. You know, it's a dream to be on the PGA Tour.
Now, Tom, I read an article by Dylan DeChair of golf.com. He interviewed you at the Old Course. He said that you named yourself Tom after the global icon Thomas the Tank Engine, kind of a rite of childhood. Is that a true story? Like, how did you choose Tom from Thomas the Tank Engine?
So my name was originally Thomas when I was younger, but a lot of people found it more convenient to call me Tom. So as I progressed and got a little bit older, I just started naming myself Tom. But yes, Thomas, my first name actually came from Thomas the Train. You know, I was obsessed of it when I was a child. I watched all the shows. You know, I had the pajamas, I had the lunchbox, I had everything. So I was obsessed with it. I don't really know why, but you know, it was just one of those things as a child. Once you get hooked, you can't let it go.
Your engine's running pretty strong right now, Tom. You won three times on the Asian Developmental Tour. You then became the second youngest winner ever in Asian Tour history. And you've already accomplished two wins on the Asian Tour, two wins on the Korean Tour. Are you surprised at how quickly you're progressing, given that you are still only 20 years old?
I mean, if I'm being greedy, I mean, I would love to come out on the PGA Tour when I was 18, 19. You know, that would have been great, but no, not really for me. You know, my team, we put a lot of work in and we expect the results. And for me to be, you know, just 20 and now be able to play on the PGA Tour full time next season, it's just a step in the stone. You know, I feel like, you know, being here is a big accomplishment, but I feel like now it's just the beginning where I have a full long career and hopefully I can stay here for a long time.
Now, Tom, I read that you grew up all over the world. Correct me if I'm wrong. China, Australia, Philippines, Thailand, for example. What has been the greatest benefit of growing up like that? And I don't mean for your golf. I mean for your life.
I mean, just seeing different cultures, I think, is the biggest thing. You know, instead of just seeing one thing, you know, in Asia, it's a small community, so you don't see much. But for me to be able to travel a lot more when I was younger, I got to see different people. Meet new friends, just stuff like that, I think, is a big, big difference, especially coming out here from Asia, where it's just such a small community. If you come out in the PGA Tour, it could be a little bit scary. But, you know, just being having a lot of friends just all around the world kind of made it a little bit easier for me to adjust coming over to the U.S. and just kind of stuff like that, I think, is a big help.
Tom, you've made 8 starts this year on the PGA Tour, and you finished 3rd in the Genesis Scottish Open against a really strong field, and then Sunday you shot 63 to finish 7th at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. What has that done for your belief in your ability to compete against the best players in the world out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think 3rd of the Scottish was really, really big for me. Just confidence-wise, I've never had that high of a finish in that strong field, you know, ever. So for me to do that just kind of got me going and saying, you know what, I can play out here. And it took a while to get comfortable out here. And I think that finish on 3rd of the Scottish just really just pushed the button. And now when I compete out here, I just feel comfortable. I feel like it's just another day. And it really is, you know, golf is just, it's just golf. And you got to treat it that way. And I feel like when you come out here, especially as a rookie, it gets a little bit intimidating playing with the best players in the world and guys you've only seen on TV. But yeah, that finish, I think really that 3rd was the fuel of, you know, that Sunday last week. So yeah, definitely a confidence booster in the last month, really.
Well, Tom, that confidence has translated to you climbing all the way to 14th on the International President's Cup standings. I have Trevor Immelman's cell phone number. Do you need me to put a word in for you? How are you handling the potential of making the President's Cup team for the first time? Because I'm happy to go to bat for you. I love your golf swing.
Please. I mean, I would appreciate that. You know, please talk to Trevor, and hopefully I make that team. You know, it's... Yeah, that team is a team that everyone wants spot on, and I'm trying to, but at the same time, not really worried about it. I feel like good golf just takes care of everything. You know, that's what I got to do. But in a couple of weeks, if I can ever make that team, you know, it definitely would be a dream come true, and hopefully I can contribute to the team.
Trust me, Tom, if Damon's advocating for you, Trevor Immelman's just going to forward that text directly to Davis Love. He's going to put you on the other team.
Thank you.
When you're heading out into your full rookie season next year, what's the scale of your ambition? Do you go out there thinking you can win out there?
I mean, I think you have to. I feel like you got to put your expectations really high for you to ever have a chance to succeed. Obviously, I know it might not happen right away, but I can guarantee that if I just keep working hard and just keep sticking to the process, you know, I have a good team. I have really good surroundings around me. So if I can just trust what I'm doing and work hard every day, I know one day that I'll have a chance to win. And hopefully, you know, one day on Sunday on the 18th hole, on the 72nd hole, I can celebrate. But I'm not trying to think about that right now. I'm just happy to be out here every day. And, you know, one of my friends, Sungjae, he's got the record of most events, and hopefully next year maybe I'll break that record. But yeah, I'm just excited. You know, I'm really, really stoked to be out here, and next year, you know, hopefully if I can win, that'd be a dream come true. But right now I'm just trying to enjoy just being out here.
I wanted to ask you about mentors. I'm glad you brought up Sungjae Im. I understand you also played a practice round with Scottie Scheffler, the world number one at the Old Course. What have you learned by watching some of the current best players in the game?
I think just a lot of it is also like mental, like you said, but also preparation. Just it takes a lot of prep, you know, playing these events. You know, you can't leave anything out there. You know, you got to turn all the stones. And just talking to Scotty, you know, playing with a lot of big guys, they just, you know, I asked them a lot of questions. You know, I'm very grateful for them to even answer them. But, you know, they gave me advice and just how to go, like just playing a tournament round, you know, the pressures that they feel. And you know, I've thought about it a lot, but yeah, they gave me advice on just a lot about pressure, just preparation and stuff like that. And like before, you know, I feel like the preparation wasn't as better as good as it could be. But now, like playing with those guys and learning, I feel like that has really helped my game get better. You know, a lot of preparation. You know, it takes a lot this week, but yeah, it's just stuff like that. Really, just, you know, really, really helped.
Tom, you have this infectious enthusiasm for being out there. And has there been one moment so far you've accomplished this dream that you set for yourself as a child to get to the PGA Tour? What's been the biggest pinch yourself moment along the way here?
Ooh, I think it was Sunday, you know, last week. I think that was one of the biggest moments I've felt, you know, just knowing that my PGA Tour card was on the line, but I didn't feel any pressure at all on Sunday. You know, I felt so calm out there. You know, I felt like I belonged. You know, I hit a lot of great shots. But yeah, I feel like Sunday, once I finished on 18, I felt like, wow, you know, I would feel a little bit of pressure, but I just felt so calm. You know, I was like, you know, I'm here to play. You know, I can get this done. And I knew I had to shoot a low one. But, you know, going on that Sunday back nine, knowing I needed to play well for the PGA Tour card for me to execute some shots and feel comfortable was really something that I feel proud of a little bit.
Oh, yeah, you can play, and you are playing well. Tom, it's great to meet you. Best of luck at the Wyndham. Congrats on getting your card. Hopefully we speak to you down the road.
Thank you. Look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
All right, he is Tom Kim. You can watch Tom Kim and some of the other great players as the action heats up. The FedEx Cup drama at the Wyndham Championship right here on Golf Channel. First round coverage begins, by the way, Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time from Greensboro, North Carolina. Welcome back to Golf Today. Last year, Anna Nordqvist captured her third major title at Carnoustie. The Swede shot a final round 69 to win by one over Georgia Hall, Madeline Sagstrom, and Lizette Salas. Taking a look at major champs representing Sweden on the men's and women's side. You see Annika leading all with 10 on a Nordqvist. The only other multiple major champ, Helen Alfredsson, Liselotte Neumann, Henrik Stenson, and Pernilla Lindberg on the list as well. Let's say hello to Anna Nordqvist, who joins us right now from Muirfield. You know, Anna, you're what I like to call a big game hunter. Why does your game seem to fit major championship venues so well?
I think I like the challenge. I like tougher conditions and tougher course setups. And I feel like, you know, the majors, the atmosphere, and brings out the best in me.
The victory you had last year at Carnoustie, Anna, one of the most difficult, famously kind of nasty golf courses in Scotland. You shot 12 under par there. Where did that victory rank in terms of the wins you've had in your career?
Oh, it's definitely my biggest victory of my career. I think as a European golfer, it's the biggest dream to win the AIG Women's Open and to pull through and do it on such an iconic venue as Carnoustie. I don't think anything ever going to beat that.
I tell you, Anna, I always thought it was unfair that when you won your first major in 2009, the general thought was the game has found its next Annika. I thought it was kind of lazy thinking just because you hail from Sweden like her. But how have you handled that storyline? Because as a three-time major champ, you're clearly putting together a terrific career.
Yeah, obviously getting compared to probably the greatest player that's ever played the game. I mean, it was quite big shoes to fill there in the beginning. And I think since I won so early, a lot of people expected, you know, things that probably wasn't really, you know, fair. But for me to pull through the same year and win the Tour Championship in 2009, I feel like meant a lot to me, because then I just wasn't like a one-hit wonder or something like that. But I feel like over the years, like, I've had my ups and downs, and you know, I played for a long time. I've been very fortunate what I've done in my career. I got to represent Europe at multiple Solheim Cups and, you know, winning multiple majors. So I'm proud of myself. And, you know, there's always been a lot of doubters saying that I wasn't really, you know, going to succeed or do things successful. But, you know, I must have done something right.
Anna, you just won a month ago on the Ladies European Tour. What does that do for your confidence for defending your title this week?
Yeah, obviously, I mean, any win is going to be special and give you a little bit of confidence. After KPMG, I went back to Sweden for 2 weeks, didn't touch my clubs, and then came to Holland. And let's say I was very rusty, but it was a great week of preparation for the Evian and, you know, the Scottish Open and this week. But it was nice. I loved the golf course. It was really tough. I hit it very straight, but I thought it was narrow. So it was a really good venue, a really good event. They have a lot of good vision that tournament, and just very excited to be there. And you know, it was nice to compete and see myself on top.
Anna, how do you balance kind of the storyline of this week, professional women competing at the AIG Women's Open at Muirfield for the very first time versus just focusing on trying to find a way to get the golf ball in the hole this week?
Well, I think it's very exciting that we're at Muirfield this week. I've never been here before. I think it's a great golf course. It's going to be a great challenge. I just think it's very exciting for me. It's obviously a special moment being the defending champion. But I'm just very proud. I love Lynx Golf. I love being in Scotland. So, today was a long day with the pro-am and media and press conference. But it's going to be a little bit shorter tomorrow, and then I'll be ready to tee it up on Thursday afternoon.
Anna, you're the only non-US player to win majors in three different decades, which is really a tribute to longevity. You're 35 now. We just saw Shan Feng announce her retirement, and she's a couple of years younger than you. How long do you have the drive to keep going, and what are the goals that you've still left yourself to obtain in this game?
Yeah, you make me feel very old. sometimes I wish I was a little bit younger and I could kind of not start over, but, you know, the talents that come out, they're so good so young now with all the access to technology and a little different era. But I just feel like consistency, I guess, has always been one of my keys. I probably hate losing more than I love winning. So there's just something about the competition that I love. It's hard to beat the feeling coming down the stretch in a major championship and that kind of atmosphere, you know, the feeling of stepping up for the first year at a Solheim Cup. So, you know, I have goals I want to accomplish. I feel like when you get a little bit of taste of playing well in the majors, it's hard to, you know, try to find something else that's going to replace it. But I'm going to want to have a family, so I know I don't have too much time, but there's a lot of exciting venues coming up, a lot of exciting tournaments, and I still feel like at times I'm playing some of my best golf, so I still feel very motivated to keep going and keep getting better.
Well, you're in the prime of your career, no doubt. You won't remember this, but years ago, I played 18 holes at Lake Nona. I was walking off the green. There you were in a golf cart. You waved to me, which I loved very, very much. What is that community? You know, you're a global player. You know, having that home base in Orlando and kind of learning how to travel, what has that meant to your kind of growth and success as a global player?
Yeah, I mean, I moved back to Scottsdale in 2019, but I lived at Lake Nona for quite a few years. It was nice to always have good motivation and good players around, you know, getting to spend some time around the boys. Certainly was nice to see and hear the sound of their shots on the range. It's just a very great community, great practice facilities, and certainly having my golf cart and being able to just ride to the range was very nice. But I love my time in Arizona, and that's always felt more like home. So I feel certainly much more at home in Arizona, and there's still a lot of great players around.
Well, you are one of them. Best of luck this week, Anna, in your title defense at Muirfield, and we hope to speak to you down the road.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Well, the AIG Women's Open being played at Muirfield in East Lothian, just east of Edinburgh. It's the 46th edition of the event, the 22nd time it's been played as a major championship. And Muirfield, of course, has hosted the Open Championship 16 times. Anna Nordqvist going for her fourth major. We welcome back in Paige McKenzie again. Paige, we want to open up this discussion a little bit here, talking about our favourite moments from this pretty colourful history of the AIG Women's Open. What's yours?
For me, it has to go back to St. Andrews, the home of golf, and the second female winner, and that was Stacey Lewis back in 2013. Lorena Ochoa was the first in 2007. But the way that Stacey Lewis won her major championship there, she was down three with three holes to play, and you know the finishing stretch. You know the rolled hole on the 17th. She put her drive in this position, had a 5-iron remaining, an intimidating green, an intimidating shot, and she stuffed it to this point. So she birdied the 17th and 18th coming in to ultimately win the championship. She described the finish. She said, it's unbelievable. It all happened so fast at the end. You're afraid of every shot And then all of a sudden you make a couple birdies and it's over. And that's how she described the finishing stretch at St. Andrews. A lot of you folks have been there before and have seen it. So to be able to see that 5-iron and remember how important, again, playing at St. Andrews was for the women and what it meant to Stacey Lewis was pretty special.
Such a great call. That birdie finish was absolutely macho. Do you have an honorable mention, a finish perhaps, or moment?
I do. And I would be remiss if I did not mention our colleague in Karen Stupples in the way that she won in 2004. She was playing at Sunningdale, and she started out one back the final round, and she opened her final round with an eagle on the first, so that's pretty good. But that's not nearly as good as the second hole, which is also a par five, where she then went on to, you guessed it. Oh yeah, she dunked it. Started out 3-2, birdie, double eagle, or excuse me, eagle, double eagle. It seems odd even saying that. Eagle albatross to start her final round, and she went on to win her major championship. So I would be remiss if I did not mention my good friend, Karen Stupples.
What a moment. I mean, Christy Kerr was in that group, by the way.
I've got to go get a lesson from Stupples, because every other analyst here has kind of failed me, apart from Paige. I haven't asked Paige for the lesson yet.
Paige either, knows the game. She can help you. She's helped me with my short
game. I've been safe.
Great stuff from Paige McKenzie on this Tuesday. Thanks, how about you have a favorite a moment kind of sticks out to you?
To me, it's what happened after play. It was the speech Sofia Popoff gave a couple of years ago when she won at Royal Training. I mean, she'd only achieved her first top 10 finish on the LPGA Tour a couple of weeks earlier. Even her first day at Troon, she had to quarantine while waiting for the result of her COVID test. And she'd battled Lyme disease for 3 years. She'd lost 25 pounds. She was on the point of absolutely quitting the game a year earlier and was kind of talked into staying in the game by her boyfriend and her family. And to me, it was just one of those moments that when you saw how much it meant and what she had accomplished. And that speech she gave right outside the front door of Royal Troon Clubhouse, it was just a reminder that fairy tales can actually come true in this game.
Think about the off-ramps that she had in her career. Could have just said, you know what, I'm tired, I'm injured, I'm not playing well. And for her to have the stick-to-itiveness to find a way that major championship, I think a lot of people were crying along with her. I'm going back to 2014 for mine. UCLA Bruin by the name of Mo Martin was swimming with some big-time fish. She's trying to post at this point. Blustery Sunday. You got Shen Chen Fang in the fold at Inbee Park and Suzanne Pedersen. This is Mo Martin. This is her second. It was a par five finisher. Hits the stick. And I love this little shimmy right here. I mean, that's how you celebrate. And of course, she has to step up and make the putt, which she does. And then she has to wait. And Inbee Park not able to make a move. Shen Chen not able to make a move. Suzanne Pedersen, that even round, final round, was able to stick. That was her first eagle of the season and the third of her career. Very straight hitter, not a long hitter. So for her to take lumber into the last and make eagle, quite a moment.
I always remember that as just being a sign of a player who was on paper so outmatched by so many other people in the field who were just so much more powerful, so much more accomplished, and who gritted it out, who found a way to win with imagination and shot-making skills. And that, to me, was one of those great examples of somebody who figured out how to play links golf.
Yeah, absolutely.
They weren't trying to play the golf they were accustomed to playing at home or every other week of the year, but they figured out the environment they were in and what they had to do with what they had been gifted.
Yeah.
And Mo Martin certainly did that.
Still love that moment from 2014. And folks, the AIG Women's Open Field, by the way, was finalized yesterday with the last 12 names punching their tickets to Muirfield via final qualifying. So here are the 12 names. Speaking of Swedes, you see Ingrid Lindblad on this list. What a decorated amateur career she had. Also on this list, Aditi Ashok of India, who finished fourth at the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. So congrats to this group of dozen players. And yes, a reminder, one more reminder, first round action gets underway on Thursday morning, 6 a.m. Eastern on USA Network. And we'll see the likes of a major champ like Nelly Korda, all beginning Thursday. And speaking of major champs, it's official, the 2012 KPMG Women's PGA champ Shen Chen Fang has officially retired from the pro game. In a statement posted on her social media, Fang said that after 15 years on tour, it's time to try something different. She also cited wanting to spend more time with her family as a big factor. We are going to miss the player known as Jenny Money. Welcome back to Golf Today. The PGA Tour heads to North Carolina for the last regular event of the season. The top 125 on the FedEx Cup eligibility list after this week qualify for the three-event PGA Tour playoffs that begin next week in Memphis, Tennessee. Good barbecue in Memphis. Good barbecue in Greensboro as well. Right now, we're going to welcome in PointsBet senior editor Teddy Greenstein. Teddy G., always great to spend some time with you. You know, while we're talking about the Wyndham Championship, what do the outright odds for the season finale look like?
Yeah, Damon, we know the guys on the bubble are going to be extra motivated this week to get in the playoffs, but let's start with the top of the points bet outright board. And there we see Sungjae Im, kind of an interesting one to be the favorite here. Now in three starts in Greensboro, tie for sixth, tie for ninth, and tie for 24th. So that certainly makes sense. We've got Shane Lowry and Will Zalatoris. We'll be mentioning Will a little bit later. Billy Ho, solid history in Greensboro, three top tens and nine starts, finished 20 under in 2020. And I'd be remiss if I did not mention Russell Henley there at plus 2,500. Sentimental favorite, I'd say, after he missed that four-footer last year to join the playoff and missed an even shorter one on 11. So let's see how Russell does.
This is one of my favorite parts of the week, Teddy, because I like to see how desperately Damon starts to reach here for his best bet of the week. So what do we have?
Yeah, I think this one's okay. You know, since 2009, there have been six first-time winners at the Wyndham. Tom Kim doesn't even have to win for me this week, though I love the way he's playing. We just talked to him a couple minutes ago, Teddy. Just a top 10 for Tom Kim, 20-year-old wunderkind, plus 325. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think about that? Good. Plus 325. Top 10.
Yeah, Thomas the Train. I love that we're all calling him Tom now. That certainly makes sense. And Damon, you're riding the hot hand. Let's just hope he didn't party too much after that glistening 9-under final round in Motown. If that's not the case, then I'm a big fan of this.
All right. Eamon, how about you, buddy?
Well, Teddy, I know it's not exactly going out on a limb when the name of Webb Simpson comes up at this tournament, but he's only had one top 10 finish on the PGA Tour this year, and that was all the way back last November at the RSM. He's got a great history here at the Wyndham Championship. What would I get for a Webb Simpson top 10 this week?
Eamon, for clients, it's priced at plus 230. For you, we'll give plus 225. We'd like a little more juice from you, a little less reward for your victory. But it is certainly a safe play. We know that Webb owns this event, and not only that, has named one of his daughter Wyndham. So like the SEC football slogan, it just means more. It means more to Webb to perform well this week. So we'll see if he gets it done for you.
All right, well, if you're going to dismiss mine as a safe play, Teddy, what have you got as your best bet of the week?
Yeah, mine is even safer. Yours is plus 230 and mine is plus 140, so who am I? But I am going with Adam Scott as the low Aussie, and I like him for a few reasons here. You know, he only has to beat four guys, and none of them has a mullet. Most prominently, he has to be better than Jason Day and Cameron Percy, and this is a very good course for Adam Scott. Shot 15 under here last year, and has been in the top 15 of the last two majors. Ball striking has been on point. And as a little bonus, I was looking at this prop on other sites, and I saw it at plus 110. PointsBet offering at plus 140, so you might want to jump on that.
Man, Teddy G doing his homework as usual. But do you have a name a bet for us? Because you always have an interesting one of those.
Yeah, Damon, I'm combining two of my favorites here, men in the women's game. So we're starting with Will Zalatoris, top 10 at the Wyndham, and then we're adding Nelly Korda, top 10 at the Women's Open. So individually, Willie Z is plus 180, Nelly is plus 140. You combine them together, you parlay them, and you got plus 750, which I think is a really nice price if these guys can play well.
Let's stay on the AIG Women's Open, the final major of the year. Teddy, what are the outright odds looking like over there?
Yeah, Eamon, we start with Lydia Ko, who's favored, and I would say it'll be surprising if she does not contend. She certainly has the short game to get it done at Muirfield and is coming off a tie for fifth in Scotland. Brooke Henderson at 16-1, very intriguing because she's, of course, coming off that amazing victory at the Evian, but this event has not been kind to her. Zero top tens in seven tries. And then let's also mention above her, Minji Lee, certainly has the game to get it done. Nice 4-under final round in Scotland.
Finally, Teddy, you know, we teased it last segment. You've got some early numbers on the men's majors for 2023. What can you share?
Yeah, in 2023, I asked our guys, what are the odds for a player just to win a major, right? I think we're already starting to think about that. We're thinking about the FedEx playoffs, and we're thinking about 2023 majors. And no surprise, Rory is at the top of this list at plus 225. Then you've got Cam Smith and John Rahm at plus 300, JT, Spieth, and Morikawa. Now, we have other guys priced here who aren't listed here that I find very intriguing. Patrick Cantlay, plus 650. He's just too good a player and too brilliant a putter not to get it done one of these years. Let's see if next year is the one. And then I bet we'll take a lot of action on Tony Finau at plus 700 since he is scintillating coming off those back-to-back victories, and everybody loves Tony.
What a great call, especially the Cantlay call. I mean, UCLA Bruin put some respect on his name, as the kids say. Teddy G, it's great spending a few minutes with you, buddy, huh?
Yeah, you mentioned Northwestern. You mentioned UCLA. We're probably about even in the standings now.
It's all good. A little school pride. Great catching up with Teddy G.